Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Almost from the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, nursing homes were hotbeds for the spread of the virus. Because nursing homes care mainly for elderly patients, many with underlying conditions, and because we didn't know much about this coronavirus, younger people were given the impression that they didn't have to worry. Well, we're finding out quickly that is wrong, as most of the newer cases of this virus are among those 25 to 59, and in some cases younger. Still, 43% of U.S. coronavirus deaths are linked to nursing homes. In North Carolina, there have been 600 deaths in nursing homes, 57% of the state's total death toll. In New Hampshire, a staggering 80% of that state's coronavirus deaths are linked to nursing homes. On top of that, there have been at least 500 complaints filed with the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, by nursing home workers about dangerous working conditions, with some saying management was well aware the virus was spreading throughout their facilities. Why have nursing homes become COVID-19 hotspots? And could solving that mystery help us understand how to navigate our way through this pandemic? Don Taylor is professor of public policy and director of the Social Science Research Institute at Duke University. He joins us this morning via Zoom from Durham. Good morning. Welcome.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Carly Brousseau is an investigative reporter specializing in data analysis with an eye toward accountability, who has been covering COVID-19 in elder care facilities for the Raleigh News and Observer. Thank you for joining us, Carly.
Thank you.
And Ted Goines is president and CEO of Lutheran Services Carolinas, which offers myriad services and operates several assisted living facilities of various types. Mr. Goines started his career in long-term care as a certified nursing assistant, a certification he continues to maintain. Thank you for being here this morning, Ted.
Thank you, and good morning.
So, Don, let me begin with you. You've written that less than 1% of Americans live in nursing homes, yet they account for at least between 5 and 25% of COVID-19 cases and half of all deaths. Is anybody clear about how or why COVID-19 became so prevalent in nursing homes around the country?
Yes, maybe it's shocking, especially if you have a loved one who lives there, but it's not a surprise epidemiologically. Any place where you have people living close together is a place where an infectious disease can spread. And by definition, people living in skilled nursing facilities need 24/7 care. So they're among the most vulnerable people in the country. So once you have introduction of a novel infectious disease into a nursing home, it's basically like flicking a spark on, twigs that have been soaked in kerosene.
So when we use the term nursing home, are we talking strictly for the purposes of this discussion? Are we talking strictly about facilities that are ongoing care for some patients who are bedridden, or are we talking about assisted living facilities where people are ambulatory, they come and go, but they do dine together and they participate in activities together? What are we talking about?
So the statistics that I was mentioning, 1% of the people, 25% of the cases, 50 as high as 80% in Minnesota of the deaths, that's skilled nursing facilities. They're the most highly regulated. Basically, they are places that can bill Medicaid for long-term patients, and they can bill Medicare for short-term rehabilitation stays. So perhaps that's the most vulnerable folk. But I'll give an example. My mother lives in what's called a continuing care retirement community in Fuquay Barreina. She lives in an independent cottage. Later, when she needs assisted living, she can move to the assisted living facility that's separated, but it's on the same campus. Down the hall from assisted living, or actually in a different building, is a skilled nursing facility. And then again, across the way is a dementia care unit. So the numbers we have been talking about are skilled nursing facilities. That is only a subset of elderly folk who are living in what we might call congregate settings. North Carolina even has very, very lightly regulated facilities called adult care homes, which are places with at least 4 beds that provide some care, meals, and things like that. So skilled nursing facilities are at the most risk. They're the most regulated, so we have the best data, but they're far from all of the problem with congregate living facilities for elderly folk.
Maybe we had the same problem in hospitals. I don't know. I don't recall reading about that, but what's the difference between this virus getting into a skilled nursing home, whether it's brought in by workers or it's brought in by family members, and a hospital setting where not every patient has this, and and they're all exposed to people coming in to work, the nurses, the doctors, the staff. What's the difference?
Infection control. So hospitals are much better at infection control. And when I say better, I just mean they're prepared for it and they have PPE and procedures that are more focused on infection control. So once we saw, basically the coronavirus came into the U.S. consciousness via a nursing home outbreak in Washington State. And then the hospitals started prepping with infection control, things like negative pressure rooms, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So skilled nursing facilities have more people probably closer together, less PPE, less experience with infection control. So it's just a harder place to do a good job of. So nursing facilities are not to be blamed. We need to figure out how to help them be successful in taking care of the elderly folks in our midst.
Well, he just said they're not to be blamed, Carly, but we got advance word that this was coming. They didn't start at nursing homes in North Carolina, and nursing homes in North Carolina, some of them are doing a better job than others, but we watch what happened in Seattle, we watch what happened in New York City, and yet it happened here with nursing homes to a great degree. Do we understand why? Were they caught flat-footed?
I think there's a whole bunch of reasons why. One question that I looked at in some depth was the emergency plans that facilities had, and some of what I did was related to requesting those plans from local governments and kind of reviewing them and looking at the federal regulations and history of those federal regulations. So nursing homes have had to have an emergency plan, and specifically one that includes a plan for something like what we're seeing now, a pandemic. Since I guess about 2017, those regulations took effect, and there was a clarification later in 2019 that spoke to this question about pandemics. But for the past few years, at least, there has been an effort by nursing homes to improve those emergency plans, which I should say pre-existed those updated regulations anyway. That wasn't a completely new idea at that time. But I think, these plans to be effective need to be quite detailed. They require a lot of preparation, a lot of expertise. In many cases, that's difficult for nursing homes to bring to bear. I think, like Don was saying moments ago about infection control, that's been a longstanding question. However, it's something that still needs a lot of work. So I think the emergency plans had some of the same issues. What I saw in the emergency plans that I reviewed was, in many cases, a pretty broad outline. Not a lot of detail on questions. I guess I looked at facilities who have done a good job in controlling infections when it's gotten into the facility during the coronavirus epidemic. And one of the things I heard was that they had a really good infectious disease expert and a really good plan. And they had plans for things like how to move patients outside for testing, really, really detailed questions. So that's been something that's been difficult to confront.
You co-wrote an article, Carly, for ProPublica, in which you report that at the start of the Trump administration, lobbyists for the nursing home industry urged the president to roll back regulations placed on those facilities, including one that required these facilities to draw up plans for hazards like the outbreak of a pandemic. Did the Trump administration comply with that request?
CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, did put forward a proposed regulation that would have rolled those provisions back. After receiving comment from a whole bunch of people, they kind of stepped back from some of those proposals as it relates to nursing homes. They moved forward with many of those proposals for different kinds of regulated healthcare facilities. The rollback that affected nursing homes in that round was related to coordination with local and federal and state and tribal emergency preparedness officials, which had been identified as one of the most important kind of necessary steps in the earlier work related to emergency preparedness at nursing homes. It was regarded as a paperwork requirement by the industry, or described that way. And the requirement that they coordinate, I guess they say continues, but there's no continuing requirement that that be documented.
But the
plans themselves still need to be made.
But didn't the Trump administration, to be fair to them, make it clear to nursing homes that they needed to include a plan on how they would respond to outbreaks like the one we are experiencing right now? And if that's the case, why have so many facilities been caught off guard?
The Trump administration did make that clarification. That was in 2019, so well into the Trump administration. Why that hasn't been done, I think, is a good question. I think that requirement has not been very strenuously required in the inspections that do take place, the surveys. And I think, like I said, there haven't been a lot of resources put into it by nursing home chains.
Ted Coins is with us. He's president and CEO of one of those chains, Lutheran Services Carolinas. And Ted, you are quoted in that article that Carly wrote for ProPublica as saying emergency plans help facilities train their staffs ahead of time and guide tough decisions as crises unfold. Why have you accepted that while other operators have been evidently slow to comply?
And I really can't speak for other operators, but I can speak for Lutheran Services. In my 34-year career, the federal government and the state have always required a robust infection control program that also includes having an infection control specialist in each nursing home or skilled nursing facility to make sure that. That we stay up with the latest and greatest. You know, this pandemic was such a change that we never saw. I never saw this much coming, even though the pandemic has been something that we've worried about and been concerned about for my whole career. And we faced many along the way, but none like this one. That changed constantly, that 1 minute we were told that masks were not necessary, and the next minute that N95 masks were needed. So things changed in a way that I've never seen before in my career.
Is that because of medical experts dealing with something brand new that they really didn't know anything about and coming up with recommendations that then they found out were not necessary and changed their mind? Or is that because of political considerations that have confused the issue?
You know, we never got into the political considerations at all. The state of North Carolina, the CDC, our local health departments have been wonderful collaborative partners through this whole thing. Our staff has been on the phone with and on webinars and conference calls almost daily since back in February, the end of February, when we saw this coming and started planning and trying to combat it.
Ted Goins is president and CEO of Lutheran Services Carolinas. We're going to talk more about regulations, and we're also going to take a look at what we can learn from the outbreak in nursing homes around the country about how to control this virus in the population at large and what needs to be done to make that happen. We'll continue in a moment at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the COVID-19 outbreak in nursing homes, what we can learn from that for the population at large with Carly Brousseau, excuse me, an investigative reporter for the Raleigh News and Observer, Ted Goins, president and CEO of Lutheran Services for the Carolinas, and Don Taylor, professor of public policy and director of the Social Science Research Institute at Duke University. Don, you have said that nursing homes will continue to be COVID-19 hotspots until officials at all levels institute sweeping testing of asymptomatic patients and workers. In the universe of people who need to be tested, that seems like a very small number of people, is it?
As compared to 340 million people in the United States. Yes, it is. One of the things I think we've struggled with from the beginning is we haven't had a national testing strategy. So if you look at South Korea, for example, almost immediately they said the federal government of South Korea will pay for tests. It doesn't mean they were doing all the tests. It meant that they were guaranteeing that private labs would get paid for the tests. That's what we should have done a long time ago. It's still actually what we should do. We need, just this week, I believe, DHHS in North Carolina has started in conjunction with CVS doing a baseline test, I think, of all workers and all residents in SNF. Really what we need to do, I believe, is to start having large-scale testing of workers in SNFs, but do so in a way that collects evidence about how to do the test, like what test is required, how often. When people test positive, how long do they need to stay out of work? Can you use antibody testing to conserve PPE, meaning people that have antibodies to the coronavirus, could they be sorted to take care of people with the coronavirus? All these are simple questions, but the answers are complicated. And right now, we are not organized to get the answers. So,
even if we're not organized to get the answers, this is a worldwide pandemic. Other countries have gotten a handle on this. We have not. So, can we not go by what they have discovered about this virus and about testing procedures and protocols?
I hate to say it, but apparently not. I mean, at least
not. Why not?
As to yet. Well, it's. My colleague said he stays out of the politics, and I don't blame him, but we've had a failure from top. So we need a national strategy focused on testing and PPE. That doesn't mean the federal government should control things. They should not. They should defer to states, who should defer to counties, who then should defer to facilities that are more and less at risk. So what we do need from the federal government is resources for testing and PPE. I mean, we still have places that are struggling with getting the PPE needed.
So. But what I'm hearing you say is that we need to institute sweeping testing of asymptomatic patients and workers within nursing homes. And then, of course, that spreads out into the general population as well. But what I'm hearing you say is that we don't know how often those tests should be conducted.
That's
so.
Right.
Because it's a snapshot of a moment in time.
Yep.
You could get a test, be clear, and by the time you get the results back, have COVID-19. So what's the point?
What's the point of testing? Well,
yeah.
You don't for harm reduction in a public health sense, you don't need perfection. You do need to put the R, which is the number of people that someone who is positive infects, well below one. And so if we could put it well below one, we can burn the epidemic out. So you don't have to be perfect. You just need to be better than what we're doing now. So that's a key aspect of basic public health.
Ted, your facilities have a pretty good track record, which we'll go into in a second. But what kind of testing have you been performing in your facilities?
Right. We're following the health department and the CDC guidelines. The health department has, let me say first, nursing homes are the canary in the coal mine. If it's prevalent in the community, it's going to be prevalent in that community's nursing homes. Dr. David Grabowski from Harvard just testified before Congress just in the last couple of weeks. He said nursing homes are vulnerable because of their location, not their quality. So he looked at all across, from five-star facilities to one-star facilities, but the only correlation is location in a community where there's COVID. He also said that poor staffing, and that's a systemic issue that I would love to talk more about, that poor staffing in long-term care was the gasoline to COVID-19's match. So when you put those things wow. together, it literally blew up. So we've been very loud about probably weekly testing. One test, one time is not going to help us. It does give you a baseline, but if we can test regularly and find that asymptomatic person that might be working in one of our facilities that we can get treatment for and get them away from our residents, then we'll have less spread in our healthcare facilities.
I'm trying to find it in my notes, and of course I can't, but somebody somewhere said, and it could have been you, Ted, or it could have been somebody that Carly spoke to in one of her articles, or it could have been Don, that the protocol ought to be this asymptomatic testing for all workers and all patients, and the workers should be tested because they come and go more frequently than the patients. They should be tested on a regular basis. And if one of those workers tests positive, then you go back and do all the patients again. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. And that's what, I mean, it's the teammates, the employees that are going to get it and bring it in generally. Now, sometimes people might go out to a healthcare appointment that they have to go out to mm-hmm. and could get it that way. But normally it's our staff that are the ones that are coming and going.
Carly, is that what's happening in most of these locations, most of these nursing home locations?
Well, we haven't been able to get that kind of information, but that's what I'm hearing in general terms from both employees and experts that I've talked to. Mm-hmm. The state's policy is what you described, which is to recommend that everyone be tested if there is one positive test by a staff member often or a resident. But what North Carolina hasn't done that some other states have done is require that universal testing, well, much earlier, many states have already completed that initial round of testing, which was required rather than recommended as North Carolina did at a much earlier date. And additionally, some states through executive orders have required weekly or even bi-weekly testing of staff, and that has not happened in North Carolina.
And Don, that's
and it needs to.
That's a recommendation that you made in an article you wrote for Newsweek, Don. You said that to protect the rest of the country, to limit the spread of the virus as we begin to reopen, universal testing of workers and patients in nursing homes is paramount. Why are they ground zero? Why nursing homes?
Well, nursing homes are places where you have people who are very vulnerable, but you also have workers who are moving in and out. So as Ted said, and as David Grabowski said, the workers who move in and out are living in the community. And so the workers are at risk of occupational exposure at work, but they're also at risk of bringing it into a nursing home. And so once you have an infectious disease spreading within a nursing home, you could think of it as a well of infection with people going in and out. So you've got to disrupt the chain somewhere. And I think the most efficient way to disrupt it is with universal screening for sure of workers, either weekly. Some people think it might even need to be more often. Again, that's what I mean by we need evidence. We need to test this out. And then, as my colleagues have said, I think patients, once you find a case, then you need to go back and retest everyone. The issues are not that much different than what Duke is talking about to bring the kids back for the fall, mm-hmm. right? I mean, we're talking about doing a baseline test, and we said, well, the CDC says that's not even required. But, you know, yesterday Harvard and Yale said they were going to do it weekly. So I suspect Duke will end up doing it weekly. And I think we probably should do it weekly, but my point is we really don't have the evidence. We need to be not only testing, but collecting the evidence and sharing it so we learn how to deal with this.
Do health professionals agree with you? Does the White House Coronavirus Task Force agree with you on the frequency of these tests and the importance of these tests in nursing home facilities?
Well, I think they, who knows what they believe. I'm not really sure. They seem to speak sometimes and then go away for several weeks at a time and then come back. The CDC now, you know, they have recommended weekly tests. So they have said that. I think them saying do weekly tests is sort of like them telling me to run a 3-hour marathon. I'll give you a hint, I can't do it. So they need to follow the recommendation with the resources to bring about the testing. I can't think of anything that will be a more efficient expenditure of government resources than to help this country get control of the pandemic, because, you know, folks are saying, I'll open the economy. We will not open anything close to the economy we have had before until we get control of the pandemic. And it's not going to happen unless we get control of issues with skilled nursing facilities.
And speaking of skilled, when you say the term skilled nursing facility, that instills confidence in you that the people working there are skilled in the medical field. And yet, Carly, more than 600 nursing home residents in this state have died from COVID-19 as a result of, as of July 2nd. Four workers in those facilities have died. And you write that the pandemic's effects have been harshest in nursing homes where there's less expertise in infection control than in other health care settings. How can that be?
Well, I think, we're comparing to hospitals in part. So I think that difference should be pretty evident. But I think it also comes down to
I don't know why it would be evident. It surprised me, and my mother was in one for a while. So okay. It surprised me that you wrote that.
Well, typically my understanding is, and please correct me if I'm wrong, other people here, is that there's not always, say, a full-time doctor. There's an infection preventionist, but that person does not need to be full-time. And many of the nursing staff are not registered nurses. There does need to be a registered nurse, but that person is not necessarily on all the time. And it's not as though every nurse has that high level of training. So that's some of what I was referring to.
So Ted, is that what you're talking about when you wanted to talk about personnel?
Yes. You know, I think as a society, we've ignored long-term care. And I use that term more broadly to include, and I do have a conflict of interest. My mother lives in a nursing home, and I have not been able to see her for a number of months either, at least not in person. But long-term care, skilled nursing, assisted living has been ignored for far too long. And that's been detrimental to all of us. And now, you know, those chickens are kind of coming home to roost, unfortunately, because of this. But, you know, we've been through, the worst labor shortage in our history. And right when, matter of fact, we were in the middle of that labor shortage when COVID hit. And my point was back in 2018, even the North Carolina legislature figured that out and passed a law creating a $15 an hour minimum wage for state workers. So, but they won't pay me a Medicaid rate that allows me to pay a living wage to all, or other providers that take care of Medicaid patients. And we're passionate to take care of those that can't afford to pay, that are Medicaid patients, the majority of people in nursing homes in the state of North Carolina. And so the state is hiring nursing assistants at $15 an hour, where I can only afford to pay $11 or $12 an hour because Medicaid pays such a low rate. So but I think systemically, we're going to have to, as a society, decide how important it is to take care of our elders.
But somehow you guys are at Lutheran Services are doing a good job, because I know you operate facilities around the state. There are three, I think, in the Forsyth County area that are doing incredibly well. As of July 5th, the Department of Health and Human Services reports that you've had 5 staff cases and 1 resident case at Trinity Elms, 4 staff cases and 1 resident case at Trinity Glen, and no deaths. If you stack those figures up against statistics from nursing homes in other parts of the state, including Mecklenburg County, which has an astronomical number, yours are infinitesimally small. What are you doing?
Well, again, and again, I can't speak for other facilities, but, you know, we jumped on this early and often, and I don't know anybody that didn't. Back the last week of February, February, the week of February 26th is when we put together our COVID team to address this issue. And that was before most people were talking about it, and certainly people didn't know that that was going on. But that was the same week that our North Carolina Healthcare Facilities Association, which is our state nursing home association, and the American Healthcare Association started flooding us with, here's what's coming, here's the information. But again, we were getting a lot of mixed signals, you know, that we didn't even that we didn't need to wear masks. And then, you know, it only needed to be a cloth mask. And again, I think a lot of that was just the progression of the virus. And as the CDC understood it and was able to give us, I'm not complaining. They did the best they could. But as the information became clearer, we all changed. If it was already in your facility, though, what chance did you have? It may have already been there, and it was too late.
What we're hearing from Don Taylor here from Duke University and from other people out there who have been covering this as reporters and healthcare professionals who have been looking at this and analyzing what's going on is that testing is the key to this. But these tests, I think, are expensive. I mean, you report, Don, that a recent estimate showed that testing every nursing home patient and worker once would cost $440 billion nationally at $150 a test. And guidelines require workers, at least, to be tested weekly, with patients being retested every time a worker comes up positive. And you, still, you say this is eminently doable. How?
That was the cost of a year of the weekly testing. But it's still expensive. A couple of points. One is that I think the cost of the testing will probably start to come down. There was a new test just approved yesterday that's a so-called point of care test, which means it gives an answer within 30 or 40 minutes and doesn't have to be sent off and done in an RNA lab. Those kind of tests, like nasal swab, send to an RNA lab, and they're about $125 per test probably. So I think the cost of testing will be coming down, point one. And point two, not having control of the pandemic is expensive. So, you know, I think this is still amongst the best money we could spend. But the cost of testing should be declining. But again, we have to understand how sensitive the test is, how specific it is, meaning false positive, false negative. I've sort of babbled here, but I think the cost of testing is coming down, but we need evidence.
Don Taylor is professor of public policy and director of the Social Science Research Institute at Duke University. He's here with Carly Brousseau with the Raleigh News and Observer and Ted Goins from Lutheran Services. We're coming right back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Don Taylor is with us as we talk about nursing homes and the outbreak of COVID-19, what we can learn from them to pass on to the rest of the world at large in terms of testing and control of the virus. He's a professor of public policy and director of the Social Science Research Institute at Duke University. Ted Goins is president and CEO of Lutheran Services Carolinas. They operate several facilities around the state. And Carly Brousseau is an investigative reporter for the Raleigh News and Observer. Carly, you report that although assisted living facilities must have a disaster plan, there are no minimum standards. But you also say that North Carolina penalizes very few nursing homes for inadequate preparedness. And you quote Tony Edelman, who's the senior policy attorney with the Center for Medicare Advocacy, is saying that can tell you two things. Either, quote, North Carolina facilities don't have as many problems as other states and that they're doing a better job. The other possibility, he says, is that the state is just not citing these deficiencies. Have you had a chance to look at the relevant data to see which of those scenarios is the truth?
Well, I haven't seen enough data to answer it definitively. My working theory is the latter. I think that from the plans that I have seen, which is in the dozens, they didn't meet those standards and weren't cited. So that's the evidence I have. It definitely doesn't answer the question completely.
The lobbying group that I referred to a little while ago that came to the Trump administration at the very beginning of his presidency and asked him to deregulate essentially this industry, says this pandemic shows, and the lobbying group is the American Healthcare Association. This lobbying group says this pandemic shows that nursing homes should be a bigger priority for resources, Ted, but not for regulation. What's your take on that?
We are an extremely regulated profession or industry. You know, you can write a regulation for anything. I prefer a much more collaborative approach to our work together, because just adding more regulations just creates more ways for things to be documented when it doesn't get to the root cause. So that technical assistance and collaborative approach seems to be a much better path to make sure that we do what we need to do. And infection control is one of those areas that we actually have done some pretty good collaborative work with the state and the federal government to try to be ready for these type things.
So are you saying that you agree with that organization, that resources would be more beneficial and would have done you a better service, essentially, all of us a better service, than more regulation would have in the face of this pandemic?
Absolutely. I mean, if Medicaid is paying 80% of the cost of care, something's got to give. We need to have those resources so that we can put those practices in place across the country. So yes, I would say it's much more of a resource issue.
Talk to me about another aspect of this that we haven't talked about. Around the country, nursing homes with the highest quality ratings, and I'm sure what quality means, I guess quality of care and outcomes of medical problems, but those with the highest ratings are those run by nonprofit and faith-based organizations like yours. Government-run facilities are kind of in the middle of the pack, with those run by for-profit organizations, or LLCs, at the very bottom. And there have been recently a number of private equity firms who have gotten into the nursing home business by buying nursing homes, who have been, a lot of nursing homes prior to this pandemic were evidently hurting badly in the money department. So this is an influx of cash. But as happens with any industry that these investors get involved with, things change rapidly, and they've discovered, Sabrina Howell, assistant professor of finance at New York University, says the quality of care declines after private equity buyouts occur. Has this been a problem among facilities in North Carolina, Ted?
I am not that familiar with that.
Is anybody?
You know, again, I think for everybody, it's the utilization of resources, the resources that you were talking about. So there are good providers across the spectrum, but I can see if it's a stock ownership type situation where they have other interests, that those resources might not go where they need to go.
Can anybody else speak to that? Because obviously when you have a for-profit facility and you have stockholders, the bottom line is the bottom line, and they begin to cut staff and services, et cetera, to cut costs. Can anybody else speak to that?
I spoke to some staff at a facility that had just before the pandemic been taken over by such a company, and they had fired a lot of the top staff. And so the situation that the frontline workers found themselves in at the moment of the pandemic was without any leadership, without a director of nursing, say, which I think can be very influential in how the outcomes that we see. So I think from the perspective of the lower level nursing staff that I was speaking to, that was a major problem. And they saw that kind of profit motive as being really damaging.
Most businesses will tell you, and I think Ted just told us this, Don, that he would prefer more resources, more collaboration, and less regulation. And most businesses would say regulation is a problem, that it causes businesses to lose money, and it's just bad for business. But loss of patients, it would seem to me, in the nursing home business is also very bad for business. Could greater regulation, more strict control of emergency preparedness, have lessened the problem that we're seeing in nursing homes around the country today?
Perhaps. What I would rephrase it and say, the best thing the federal government could do right now would be to adopt a national testing strategy, which would be to pay for testing and then leave it up to states and the facilities to decide, do I think I need to do it once a week? Do I need to do it every 2 days? So in Arizona today, maybe they need to be doing it every 2 days because, you know, the percentage of the tests coming back positive in the community is 30%. But in other places it's lessened. So the thing about the framing it as regulation or not, that makes it into this ideological push and shove. And one thing I guarantee is that SARS-CoV-2 doesn't care whether you're a Dem or Republican, disinterested, independent. So everything has become so politicized. But if we're thinking of what to do now, I think it is to make sure we provide testing capability and PPE to nursing homes and other places that are taking care of elderly folks. And then on the back side of this, I think we do need to say, man, how can we not be caught like that again?
Yeah. The wearing or not wearing a mask seems to be the most vibrant example of the politicization of this virus. But here's another example. A report from Senate Democrats cited the administration's slow, disjointed response, a lack of coordination among government agencies, hindering access to testing and to PPE, a lack of urgency, a lack of strategy, a delay in demanding these facilities report data on coronavirus cases, all of this being very problematic. Of course, that's what Democrats have said about this. The head of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which is the lead federal agency on nursing homes, disagrees and called that report disingenuous. Do you have an opinion of where the truth lies?
Well, I think the United States is doing just about the worst in the world at dealing with the pandemic. I guess we can say who is most at fault or not, but the reality is we're in big trouble right now and we need to work our way out of it. And if we're talking about nursing homes, it's going to take testing. It's going to take PPE. People are going to have to, I think learn to wear a mask, wash their hands, maybe do one thing a day that's something a little less free than what they would otherwise want to do and try to sort of pull through this thing together. So, I think whoever's the right, I have a notion of who's more correct there, but it doesn't really matter. We have got to change what we are doing because we are basically being embarrassed as a country right now.
Yeah.
We can't, something that has no heart, no soul, and no brain is grinding our country to a halt. And every other country in the world, except maybe Brazil, is doing a better job than we are.
Carly, you have made your bones on data analysis. That's what your expertise in reporting is. I have had these conversations with other reporters about the transparency of all of this and the difficulty that people like yourself have in getting the true information from medical facilities about just what is going on, because for a long time the state didn't report these things and didn't require that they be reported. What is the situation right now?
Well, we're currently getting information twice a week about outbreaks at congregate living settings. I think the terminology is, so that includes nursing homes, that includes assisted living facilities, it includes other types of group homes, and also we're getting some information about jails and farms where workers live also together in close quarters. That data has been very useful. There are some problems with it, of course. It's released in a PDF format, which is really difficult for the analysis, just adds extra steps. I've also found several inaccuracies. So for example, the data that you were citing earlier about the number of workers who has died, which I think is an important stat in this conversation, was wrong. That the fourth death actually never happened, I got word of last week. So we had to make sure to correct that. But there have been several problems like that that I find kind of alarming. I think there was a late, and there have been some problems delivering accurate data as well.
Is it correct to say that deaths in assisted living facilities are not counted in federal records of nursing home deaths, so that the actual number of deaths really is unknown? Is that accurate to say?
Well, the state is reporting deaths in what are called adult care homes in the state. So assisted living is regulated at the state level instead of the federal level, which is why the federal government doesn't have those statistics. Each state regulates it differently. In North Carolina, there's two different kinds of assisted living facilities. There are these adult care homes that have more than 7 beds. So probably what you're thinking of when you're thinking of an assisted living facility, a larger facility with mostly older people, but also there are a lot of people dealing with mental illness. And then there are facilities with 6 or fewer beds, which sometimes maybe more frequently involves people with developmental disabilities and also mental health issues.
We're running into the same kind of opaqueness when it comes to discovering what's going on with police departments around the country, because there's no national reporting repository for things that police departments do. And obviously there's none when it comes to the deaths in assisted living facilities and nursing homes. How do you fight a pandemic? How do you fix a problem? How do you remain a nation if you don't aggregate things that are going on in your nation and use that as a tool to fix things? That's a rhetorical question. I'm not sure any of you can answer, but if you want to try, let me know. Okay.
I think these are areas where we do see problems that are identified many decades ago that continue to be problems. I mean, that's certainly true in policing, but I think that's true also in elder care, maybe to a slightly lesser degree, because there is more aggregation in that area than in policing.
Ted, ABC News reports that assisted living facilities to date have received no direct federal help in dealing with this pandemic. If that's true, why?
Again, I think a lot of the emphasis has been placed on the skilled nursing facilities. And since assisted living, as Don mentioned, is regulated at the state level, they don't have that national presence that skilled nursing does, so have not really been considered in the same way. And they desperately need to be, because the and it's not just that, but it's also group homes for folks with developmental disabilities. Anywhere you have congregate living, we need to be caring for and paying attention to those people and supporting them.
Don, if it's true that the nursing homes were like tinderboxes waiting to ignite prior to this virus, what steps need to be taken to help them recover once the pandemic is over?
I think it was Ted that said, this has just made people pay attention to a system that's had big problems. I mean, for the last 25 years, most of my research has been about how we take care of elderly folks. And in many ways, it's an afterthought. People often assume, for example, the Medicare program, will pay for things like nursing homes, and that's not true, except in short-term instances. I think what Ted said was there's a couple things that I think that this pandemic has not created, but has reaffirmed problems. One is how we take care of elderly folks, and the other is really racial inequality in terms of mortality and morbidity. And the coronavirus did not create either of those. They are systemic long-term issues, but they raise sort of a clarion call of, we need to do something different after we survive through this. Exactly what that looks like, I think right now we need to survive through this and then basically have that conversation.
Well, you said at the very beginning of the program that to get a handle on what's going on in nursing homes, we have to, and that to protect the rest of the country, you said that we have to test everybody in a nursing home because they're going out into the real world, and that will protect the nursing home. But doesn't the opposite have to happen? Don't you have to protect the rest of the world so that this stuff doesn't come into nursing homes? Doesn't that require universal testing, wearing of masks, hand washing, et cetera? We're all in this. We all have to do this. Is that what you're saying? Very quickly, 30 seconds or less.
Yes, testing, PPE, and everybody being a part of this is going to be required, yes.
Dr. Don Taylor is a professor of public policy, director of the Social Science Research Institute at Duke University. Carly Brousseau is an investigative reporter for the Raleigh News and Observer. And Ted Goins is president and CEO of Lutheran Services Carolinas. Thank you all for the hour. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.